Welcome to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network, a show that streams health, happiness, and hope to the kidney community. You can download all Kidney Talk shows from iTunes and find a variety of resources to help you navigate this illness at rsnhope.org. Please welcome your host, Lori Hartwell, who has lived with kidney disease since the age of 2.
Well, welcome to Kidney Talk, everyone. We have an incredible woman with us today. Her name is Sasha Couch. And I learned about Sasha when she entered our 2016 essay contest. And she wrote an amazing story called Note to Self. And it ended up winning. We had hundreds of essays and she won. And she's gone on to written other articles for us. My Pal Hope and Celebrating Our Independence. So you can go check those out on our website. But I just want to, I'm excited to hear her story and her journey through kidney disease and how she's overcome some of the different obstacles and maintains a positive attitude. So welcome to the show, Sasha.
Thank you, Lori. I'm happy to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about, you know, what your life was like and what happened when you were diagnosed with kidney failure.
Well, it's interesting because I didn't have sort of a lead up into actually going into the stage where both my kidneys had failed. I think a lot of people do have sort of a lead up where they have kidney disease and it just gets progressively worse. For me, it was kind of an all of a sudden thing. I hadn't been feeling well and, you know, I was experiencing some symptoms but not recognizing what they were. When I finally went to the doctor, he put me in the ER that day.
Oh, wow.
And my journey, I guess, started that day because I had to get emergency dialysis. And that was it. That was, no real time to process because it was just, you know, we have to get this going now.
And you, what were your symptoms?
I had which in retrospect, I now know was a buildup of toxins, but I had gained about 20 pounds. I was very sluggish. I was experiencing extreme fatigue, just not really able to focus or to really function throughout a whole work day, those type of things. So I wasn't really sure what was happening. So those are the main things that brought me to the doctor.
And what was the cause of kidney failure?
Well, I've been type 1 diabetic for, at that point, it was about maybe 25 years, maybe 30 years. So I wasn't born with it, but I was diagnosed when I was about 12. So I think it was partially diabetes. Kidney disease runs in my family. My father actually passed of kidney disease. And then another relative actually passed of kidney disease. So there definitely was a genetic element to it as well.
Well, now may I ask how old you were when you were diagnosed?
Yes, I was 40.
Oh, wow. And, you know, 50 is the new 40 now, just to let you know. But anyways, it's still, so you're 40 years old, and I understand you were living alone at the time, so that must have been really frightening, your rush to emergency, and, you know, you call your family and tell them what?
Yeah, well, it was definitely an interesting time. I called my family, all of whom live on the East Coast, and let them know what was happening. Two of my family members came out right away because I was in the hospital for a while. Thankfully, I have a huge support system here because I've lived here quite a while. And, you know, my friend drove me to the hospital. A number of friends came to the hospital to help me. So that was very helpful. But definitely knowing that I was going to have to start this dialysis journey and living alone was a big deal and was pretty daunting, sure.
And were you able to work when you were going through this process, or did you have to take a leave of absence?
Yeah, I couldn't work for a while. I just wasn't functioning well enough to be able to work. I know that people definitely experience different I actually was just, I'm in all these online kidney groups, and it's, there's definitely a difference in who can work and who can't work, and why people choose to work or why people stop working. I just wasn't functional enough at that point to work. Well, I did work while on dialysis, but not in the very beginning.
You know, you crashed in. Like, you basically went head into a brick wall, where some people may have more more forewarning and more knowledge, so they're not at a point where they need emergency dialysis. So I think that's probably totally justified that you had to take a break. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your treatment option that you chose and why you chose that option.
Well, at first I was on hemodialysis, so I was going to the center. But I had heard, and I was doing research about other options. So I knew that there was also home hemodialysis and PD. And because I was a little bit younger for dialysis, now living in L.A., 40 is certainly not young, but because I was a little bit younger for dialysis, I thought that might be the best option for me. So I spoke to a few people about it. I spoke to my nephrologist and the nurse that actually administers the PD in my area, and they also thought it might be a good option. So after about 3 months, I got that the surgery to get the PD tube inserted, and I did PD for the rest of my time on dialysis.
Now, how did you do the cycler, or did you do the exchanges?
I did this. Well, at first you have to do exchanges for a couple of weeks, but then I was on the cycler. Yeah, and it definitely, I mean, I think people choose different options for different reasons, and certain ones are better for some other people. I have a very close friend who prefers going in the center because he likes the camaraderie and he enjoys being kind of an uplifting spirit for other people there, and that works for him. But I really like doing PD because it made me feel like I wasn't fitting my life around my dialysis, but I was fitting my dialysis into my life.
Now, so how was it like, you know, dating, socializing, you know, now that you're on dialysis? Because sometimes, unfortunately, I hear some of our members call and they're like, oh, I don't want anybody to know I have kidney disease. And that's a little sad, isn't it? If you have to hide that whole part of your life.
Yeah, I'm pretty open. And so I told people right away, just because I preferred having the support and that type of thing, and people understanding why, because I was also, at the time, I was very active and pretty social. You know, I don't have kids or anything like that, so I was pretty social, and I needed people to know why, you know, I would have to go home early or whatever. So I definitely was very open about it, and also I wanted people to ask me questions, and I realized from being so open about it that people really don't understand kidney disease. So then I started looking at it as my opportunity to, you know, spread some knowledge about kidney disease. I was actually very, very surprised. And maybe I was a little biased just because I knew about it because of my relatives who had had kidney disease. But how little people actually understood even how the kidneys worked. I actually had a boyfriend when I started dialysis for about a year into it. And then after that, I didn't, because I was so open about it, it wasn't a huge issue for me in terms of the social element, but I definitely was cautious about who I would bring into my life because of my illness, for sure. Yeah.
It's scary. I mean, you know, when I was dating many, many years ago, because I've been married like 21 years, but it was interesting because sometimes, you know, you could kind of tell when you're dating somebody and you're like, you know, I'm really not interested. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I have, you know, I need dialysis and I'm on. And you could just see them, like, to quote Rita Rudner, leave skid marks, you know, like run away.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I look back on some of the people that I dated or, you know, we hung out, and And some people just couldn't handle it. And then I, you know, ran into my soon-to-be husband, and he just loved me for every part of me. And that wasn't even an issue. So I often think back, because I grew up with Miss America runner-up, and she has been married
like
and divorced.
She was your friend?
Yeah, it went back, yeah, when we were younger. She was our friend, Miss America runner-up. We grew up together. And she was so beautiful and had so many guys that, I mean, she's been married and divorced 3 times because she had the opposite problem. Like, people didn't really want to get to know her. They were so infatuated with her beauty. They, you know, but they did want to be with her. And, you know, we're the opposite side of that. They don't want to get to know us because of our illness. And it was an interesting, you just have to, you know, find the right people who willing to get to know you and what other elements that may your beauty or your illness are all secondary. I mean, you're still the person you are. So it was an interesting observation.
Yes. I think I ended up focusing mostly on I'm super, super independent anyway. I always have been, which is probably more sometimes a problem. But I think I was focusing so much on my illness and just trying, you know, working and feeling well and healthy, that I guess I wasn't really even thinking about, like, that wasn't at the forefront of my concerns, I guess, dating.
Well, and one of the things that I really loved about your essay called Note to Self was that the whole idea of the essay was if you could write a letter to yourself. Or if you could tell yourself something now when you were diagnosed, and you titled it Note to Self. And can you possibly just, you know, you're several years out, people may be crashing into dialysis right now. What did you tell yourself several years later?
Well, there are definitely things I think that I would have maybe done a little differently or act a little differently, or not, you know, definitely not known. I mean, I already mentioned it, but I definitely didn't know going into it how little people knew about kidney disease and dialysis. And, you know, I think I would have been more prepared for, I'm sure you've received this over the years, but you don't look sick, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
And stuff like that. You know, I definitely would have, I don't know, there are a lot of things, I guess, in retrospect that you could say you maybe would have done a little bit differently.
I love how you say in your essay how you said you threw a dollar into a jar every time somebody said, you don't look sick.
Oh, yeah.
So how much money did you have?
That was a big deal. It was, you know, that was quite a bit in that jar. Quite a bit in that jar. I didn't realize that was, and, you know, it definitely gave me a better understanding of, like, I see people get up. This is a perfect example. I see people get upset when they see someone with a handicap parking pass who doesn't look handicapped, and you really don't know anyone's story. You don't
right.
know what anyone else is going through. So it's better to be compassionate and empathetic than to be upset or angry. I don't even know why people get upset or angry, but, you know, it definitely opened my eyes to being, you'd really never know what anyone else is going through.
You know, and I'm kind of guilty of that, too, because, you know, here I'm going to Trader Joe's, and some lady parks in a handicapped spot and gets out in high heels and runs into the store. And I'm like, does she really need the handicap sign? Now, the high heels are something that I have a prejudice against, because if you can wear high heels and run, I think that that's the cutoff. I don't know about you, but, anyways, so that's another show. So tell us a little bit about your transplant and when you got called for it.
Okay. So I was on dialysis for about 3 years, and I got called Well, I had a false call, I guess, which I refer to as my dress rehearsal. So I got that call in December of last year, and that didn't work out. I went to the hospital and did the whole process, but it ended up that kidney was not appropriate for me. And then I got my second call in March of this year. So that one was the one. So it's a very harrowing experience because, you know, you get this call and you have to just go. You know, you can't even think about it. You have to just be prepared to get moving and go.
Now, do you know anything about the donor?
Yes, I sent a letter to his family, and they sent me an email back, and he was quite young, unfortunately, but, you know, they told me a little bit about him. He's only 22, which is, you know, and actually not too far away. He's from Newport Beach, and actually I actually looked up his funeral and his obituary, and that was really interesting for me. It's very interesting to have a part of someone else inside of you and to put a name and a personality with that organ. It's such a strange thing. So, but I was very happy to hear from them. I thought, because you never know. I mean, I like to think that it comforts people to know that their loved one who unfortunately passed is bringing life to someone else. But I don't know if that actually holds true for everyone.
I think there actually is a study out there that when people donate organs, I don't know if they hear from the recipient, but it does lessen the grief. And I think that, you know, them hearing from you is just an amazing, you know, closure to part of their son or family member's story. And I don't know if you often hear this, but people often say, oh, somebody had to pass away for me to live. And there's a little bit of guilt sometimes, but we have to remember that we had nothing to do with the death. That was going to happen no matter what.
Right.
And you really got to, you know, compartmentalize that, because you know, you want to make sure if you're given the gift of life to embrace it and not come with any quirky hang-ups that prevent you from living the life you were meant to live with the gift of life.
I absolutely agree, and that's why it pains me to know that there aren't more organ donors. Actually,
what is your creatinine, may I ask?
Right now, it's 0.7.
Oh, that's wonderful. And now, did you, you said you were type 1 diabetic. Was a pancreas ever a thought?
I actually did get a pancreas.
Oh, you did get the pancreas too. Okay.
I did. I got a kidney and a pancreas from the same donor. It's interesting because the kidney disease was definitely difficult and a struggle, but having been diabetic for so many years, I think it was interesting to not have to take shots and all of that for the first few weeks. I think that actually freaked me out the most. Like, it was just so bizarre.
And you mean I can have that box of See's candy?
You know what's so funny, though? My taste buds are still, I think from after so long just not being sugar-oriented, I still haven't really picked up a taste for, you know, every once in a while I'll have, like, juice and stuff, which I didn't really do because it has so much natural sugar. But otherwise, I'm kind of just eating the same, which is interesting to my friends and family. But yeah, I have to say, it's very bizarre to... Somebody asked me the other day, oh, are you diabetic? And it was the first time I said no. It was very, very strange. But So, yes, I did get a kidney and a pancreas.
Well, that's interesting because you live in L.A. and, you know, you were on dialysis for 3 years. And the wait time in Los Angeles is about 10 years, but it's actually shortened if you need both organs. So that probably explains why you got the kidney pancreas much quicker than if you just need a kidney.
It's strange because it's almost counterintuitive. But, yeah, that's how it works.
So you were diagnosed at 40. You crashed into dialysis. You were on PD for 3 years. You got a call and got a kidney pancreas, which means you are no longer diabetic or you no longer need dialysis. So what advice can you give to people who are, you know, potentially just crashed into dialysis and they're like, you know, my life's over?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think before this whole experience, I may have been a little sarcastic about, you know, people who say hope is the key type of thing. I mean, I might have given that an eyeball roll before, but I definitely recognize that hope really keeps you strong. Just the whole time I maintain that, you know, even times where they told me, oh, it might be an 8-year wait, or for example, my sister got tested, and at the very end of the process, she couldn't do it because of a medical issue she was found to have. I had another donor, and at the end, he couldn't do it. So you go through these discouraging moments, but you have to just keep thinking that it's going to be okay. And I know that sounds hokey, but you do have to keep your spirits positive, and you have to laugh a lot. I just tried to maintain my same appreciation for the things that I enjoy through the whole time I was sick. And I still do it because even now that I'm transplanted and it's been, you know, 8 months, I don't know what can happen tomorrow. I mean, rejection is still always a possibility. So I just want to be positive and maintain the things that I do that keep me happy, and you know, I just want to keep moving forward. I feel like if you're always thinking about moving forward, it's a positive thing. Now, I know that there are days that are so difficult for people. I mean, everyone with kidney disease of any level, even if you're not at end stage, if you're going through any type of kidney disease, there are days that are just really, really tough. And even your closest family members or your spouse may not understand. You just have to fight through and stay strong. I know that sounds hokey.
It's not hokey because I totally relate to it. And, you know, one of the things you said is it's really important to reach out to other people who have kidney disease. And, you know, there's so many different groups that are on Facebook and social media. We have different ways, you know, RSN, that you can connect with patients and or your peers. Because, you know, one friend can make a difference when you connect with somebody who has the same illness. And I don't know about you, Sasha, but one of the gifts of having an illness is you really realize you don't have all the time in the world. And
right.
It makes you appreciate and do things a little bit more quickly. Like, you know, I don't think that, you know, people say, well, what you get an idea, Lori, and you have it done. And I'm like, because my whole life I've had an illness and tomorrow was never promised to me. And so I don't want to put off tomorrow what I can do today. And I want to enjoy the moment today. And so it gives you a little kick in the butt that, you know, your mortality is a little bit more evident than when you don't have an illness, because, you know, death is, you know, inevitable for everybody. But that's, you know, one of the gifts that I think is given. And, you know, we got to embrace the moment. And I have to tell you, if anybody listening gets a chance, go to our website, rsnhope.org, type in Sasha Couch, and you will get all the different articles she wrote. She's an excellent writer. You'll now get to be listening to this kidney talk because I love your spirit, your courage, and, you know, your ability to just persevere, because it's not easy when you're diagnosed with any illness. Here you were diagnosed with diabetes type 1 as a child, and you talked a little bit about, you know, people coming forward to donate a kidney, and it didn't work out, but it actually worked out because you got the kidney and a pancreas, which is you know, the ultimate gift of if you have that double whammy diagnosis.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And it definitely keeps you focused on the things that are really important, too, in life, which I think people can go astray of a lot of times, especially here.
Well, and you know what? If I always say to myself, if it doesn't matter in 5 years, it doesn't matter.
Right.
So something happens or something, you know, feel like, oh, my God, there's a typo in the newsletter. And I'm like, well, wait a second. If it doesn't matter in 5 years, it doesn't matter, you know? So I just always kind of relay that statement, you know, oh, the car got hit, you know, or somebody scratched it on the way coming out. You get, ah, and they're like, if it doesn't matter in 5 years, it doesn't matter.
Right,
and that's
right.
Kind of my little motto of, you know, just wait to worry, Lori, just wait to worry. And because that does suck the joy out of life. Well, thank you, Sasha, for sharing your story. We have the same creatinine, so we have something else in common.
Oh, yay!
And
thank you.
And I'm excited to, you know, hear about your future endeavors and keep on peeing. I mean, what is it? Wait.
I know.
Wait, pee all you can pee, right? That's what you say to people.
That's become, I mean, I'm so happy to be doing it, but it's definitely, I forgot how much time and energy it takes up. My first movie, I forgot entirely to go to the restroom before I went in, and about halfway through, I was like, uh-oh.
I gotta go.
So, it's pretty funny. And Lori, thank you so much for being an inspiration, because you are definitely an inspiration with, you know, your journey that you share with us and your positivity. So thank you for that.
Well, we have a lot to be thankful for. So thank you, Sasha, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network. Please make sure to find us on Facebook or sign up for our newsletter at rsnhope.org. Kidney Talk is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from your physician. Always seek the advice of your own healthcare provider regarding your medical condition.